This is Storage Unpacked. Subscribe at storageunpacked.com.
This is Chris Evans recording another Storage Unpacked podcast, and this week I'm joined by two co-hosts. I've got Martin and Chris here. How are you doing, guys?
I'm doing fine, Chris. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. Not bad. Martin?
Yeah, pretty good. Not bad.
Yeah. It seems a bit unusual to be looking at each other because we've got cameras turned on today. Only for our own purposes, of course. Nobody else gets to see it.
It's just as well, otherwise they'd see me titty-writing my hair all the time.
Okay, let's move on. Right, so, Chris, I thought it'd be good to catch up with you on this particular topic. Martin and I have had a recording with the Dell team on PowerStore, which will come out before this podcast, came out at the beginning of the week. And really, we need to follow up the discussion we had last year on a podcast recording we did called Mid-Range Madness. I think I called it March or May Mid-Range Madness, just for a bit of alliteration there. And really, we were talking about what was going to happen and what Dell were going to do with their mid-range.next. If you remember, and it was 12 months ago.
It's a long time ago.
It was a while ago. We were all anticipating something coming up to say, here's the next platform. And we never got it. So this is really a bit of a follow-up to that. And to try and sort of learn from some of the pieces Martin and I learned from the Dell guys even just last week, which was quite an interesting call, Martin, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was interesting. Insight into what we're thinking about with PowerStore and how it's been implemented. So, yeah, it was definitely an interesting discussion.
Mm. Let's start with last year. I mean, let's start with what we were talking about. Because if you remember, we were talking about 3-into-1. We were talking about Trident as the name of the new platform and 3-into-1 as their intention to merge all the different platforms. I'm not really sure that's what we were thinking is exactly what they've done. What do you think, Martin, in that one, in that respect, bearing in mind what we had in our conversation with them last week?
Well, firstly, I'm not sure where Trident fits into all of this. There was a couple of mentions of it, but almost as if it wasn't part of a PowerStore announcement. So I'm not quite sure what's going on there. And it does seem to be, they are claiming a complete code rewrite, but they do seem to be using IP from the various platforms. Very interested to see how this looks long term, because the three platforms I'm sure, I assume we're talking about is the old Competent platform, the Unity platform, and the third one, Chris?
Extreme.io.
Oh, Extreme.io. Keep forgetting about Extreme.io.
Mm. Yeah. Which is, you know, you shouldn't forget, because they actually said that was like the framework around which they built PowerStore. That's what they said to us, didn't they? So that was a surprise to me, because we almost went down a little bit of a rut, really. I think we had to be quite careful, because we were sort of saying, well, it would make sense to take these different technologies and use them to their advantage. But they almost thought we were thinking that they'd just literally taken the code and sort of stitched it together. And that wasn't what we were saying. We were implying that they'd use either the technique or the logic or the algorithms from those platforms to build, or the architecture to build the new solution.
I mean, some of the announcements they've made, Chris, would imply that that's exactly what they've done. We were talking about the RAID levels before. The RAID levels for RAID 5 are exactly the same as they are on Unity or Clarion or VNX, as it was in has been. So some of these things are a bit weird, because you think they almost seem to be falsely restrictive. If you were to rewrite your RAID 5 code from the ground up, you may not end up in that position. So that's why I think there's been some confusion exactly what they've done. But does seem to be things which just don't feel quite right.
Mm. What were your initial thoughts, Chris?
I thought they produced a Ronseal product. They said they were going to unify Unity, VNX, SC, and Extreme.io and provide straightforward migration, automated migration indeed, from those products to what's turned out to be PowerStore. And as far as I can see, they've done precisely that. I think they've also managed to keep all the separate engineering teams on board, the SC team, the Unity VNX people, the Extreme.io people. They told me 1,000 or so engineers have been working on this project. And I dare say that using IP from those products, albeit introduced in containerized form, kept those people on board. They had a stake in it. Their technology, their IP was moving forward into the new product. I think that possibly was an important consideration.
What did you think about the containerization slash virtualization piece, Martin? I've got a thought on that. I'm interested to hear what you think on that.
So I think with containerization slash virtualization, if we talk about it from a pure storage point of view, as opposed to talking about the X nodes, it does allow them to do some things. It allows them to drop in additional protocols with containers relatively easily. So if they wanted to put in an object protocol, they could drop it in as a container. So it makes sense. And they've done an awful lot of work around containers. The containerization of Dell EMC's storage products has been going on quietly for 4 or 5 years now.
And I thought there was sort of two angles to this. First of all, and we'll get onto that in the discussion about the apps on stuff at some point, but there was the whole idea of containerization, where clearly functions have been pushed into containers. We've seen other vendors do that already, where, for example, on Weka, it's all containerized, and say one particular container task goes off and looks after a piece of media, and then all the other containers interact with that media managing container, so that if there's another piece of media put in, you just spin up another container. If that media is removed or replaced or anything happens to it, you shut down that container. So there's other vendors have done something similar. I think initially we saw, probably with Unity, we saw the containerization approach, but I was slightly confused by the idea that we were talking at one point about containers and another point about VMs. And I sat back and thought, okay, well, I think what they're saying is that there's an option to virtualize, which is the apps on scenario. But within that, even if they are virtualizing, the stuff that runs within the VM is still using containers within that VM. That was my understanding of the way it looks.
Tanzu?
No, I don't think it's necessarily Tanzu, Chris. I just think that it's one big honking yes. VM, for want of a better description, in which they've got a containerized implementation. So the VM was there to separate the access of, or separate the kernel access and security challenges around running the entire infrastructure as containers. And they sort of referenced other people who've done containers on their platform. And I don't know whether it was deliberate, but Zadara, for example, were doing containerized apps on the same platform as the storage. And I think they were implying that that was a risk because obviously the security challenges to that. Whereas I think this is literally just a big VM within which they've put containers. I don't think it's a Tanzu or any sort of, you know, more complicated implementation, because that takes too many physical pieces of infrastructure to make work.
I can't see how Tanzu would really help them with this. You don't really need an incredibly complex orchestration tier for your storage operating system. I can see it allows them to do some interesting stuff around maintainability. It means if they redo their replication code or they patch a particular piece of code, you can just swap a container out. You don't necessarily need to bring the whole array down. So it means that they can do things to maintain availability in maintenance scenarios, which is something which end users have been crying out for a long time.
Okay, but if you're running in this apps on merge, you're running PowerStore OS as a bunch of containers inside a virtual machine, that's an awful lot of virtualization overhead going on. Surely response time would suffer.
There is a lot of potentially, I guess a lot of abstraction in this platform. And we should say, in case anybody hasn't actually listened to or even looked at the announcements, AppsOn is the ability to run your own applications on the same physical platform as the storage. So embedded application execution on the storage, with the assumption that because your application is running close to the storage, it will somehow run more efficiently because the latency would be very low. Obviously, there is a trade-off there because you're giving some resources to applications. So there are two modes. There's an X and there's a T option. The T option is traditional storage. The X option is 50-50 applications and storage. And when you're in the X mode, you're virtualizing using ESX to have your storage within a VM. And then all your applications sit in VMs next to it. So that's roughly the sort of design of AppsOn. You're right. There's got to be a certain degree of abstraction. Now, interestingly enough, though, this is where, Martin, we got into a very interesting conversation about some features that have been added into ESX to allow the VM that runs the storage to directly access the media. And by that, I'm assuming they were talking about the PCIe NVMe media, because they just said PCIe. They didn't say anything else. And I think the idea there is, obviously, there's a known overhead in using a hypervisor. So by giving direct access to the hardware, you can actually overcome some of those latency challenges.
Yeah, that was interesting. And it's something which has been ruminated before. I mean, I remember talking about probably even before ESX 6, probably back in the days, about 5, about how storage vendors themselves may be able to get better access to the underlying storage hardware to allow them to produce some virtualized storage appliances. When VSAs first started to appear, there was always a discussion about whether it was going to be increased latency because you were going through the VM, but you're going through the hypervisor tier. So it appears that Dell are leveraging their relationship or their ownership of VMware. I'd be very interested to see whether this becomes a more general capability, and which is something which is offered out to all storage vendors who may want to produce their own storage appliances.
I agree. And from memory, I think they said that the work they did with Intel and VMware, because it was a combination of the two, that was put into ESX 6.7 U2. And presumably it is fully documented and therefore supported for any other vendor to come along and use. But I haven't gone back and double checked that. But if that isn't the case, Chris, I mean, that's a big implication to think that VMware would be integrating solutions that they don't necessarily make available to all of their customers.
If that's the case, I can see Dell EMC thinking that would be a wonderful thing to do because it would give them a big advantage over competitors. But it reminds me of what Intel's done with Optane SSDs and Optane DIMMs, tying particular Xeon scalable processors to them and locking AMD out of the market completely. That seems to me, in Intel's case, it's a two-edged sword with the advantage for Intel. But in this case, with Dell and VMware, I don't think it's an advantageous thing for Dell to do. I think other arrays are so fast and so feature rich that they'll be able to point this out as a disadvantage, a locking capability for Dell EMC and VMware, and make marketing hay while the sun shines and shines and shines.
So let's be fair and just remind, just say again, we're not saying that that is the case. We don't know whether that's the case. All we're saying was, if it is the case, then that could be a potential risk. But of course, we don't actually know at this point. We're just surmising.
Yes. Yes, I'd like to think that this is not the case. Dell and VMware jointly are going to make this openly available to everybody.
Yeah. So that was a bit of a background on the platform itself, obviously. It was nice to talk about what we talked about last year and see how that's coming out in terms of the product that got released. But this isn't the only announcement we've seen in the last few weeks, Chris. I mean, you know, the market itself is quite wide.
Yes, we've had Hitachi with its E990 all-flash array sitting below its top-end 5000 and the others. We've had Nexan introduce a 32-slot QLC flash array. There's a Dell EMC one. There's IBM with its flash system announcement a couple of months ago, unifying store-wise and the flash systems. And there's Pure, which has updated its flash arrays recently enough and has got a single operating system. I'm beginning to see a kind of convergence in technology between the mid-range storage array vendors. They all seem to be heading towards a single storage operating system. And they all seem to be heading towards an all-flash array that's NVMe over Fabrics ready and storage class memory ready. They're all sticking in Kubernetes CSI plugins. They're all going for the hybrid cloud. It's almost as if every new technology that comes along is taken on board by them all as table stakes and tick, 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 tick is applied to the product lines. So these arrays are beginning to look fairly similar, apart from two outliers. The vast data QLC flash array doing everything for everybody, and at the higher end, perhaps InfiniDAT still sticking to disk, but diametrically opposed to virtually every other storage array vendor. I think we're looking at a contraction in storage array technology in terms of the physical media, I mean.
Yeah, that's an interesting view of the mid-range market, and I think you're right. I mean, you could say Pure have got the same operating system across all their platforms. That's definitely the case. I get the feeling that IBM basically rebranded their products to have the same name, but they're probably completely different under the covers, which strikes me as slightly unfair. If they are all still different, but you've just called them the same, that's a bit like NetApp and its cluster mode and its 7 mode and trying to claim that they were both on tap when they were two totally different products. Not going to, you know, there we go. I'll just put it out there. Hitachi seem to have gone for SVOS across everything, and then it becomes a choice of you have big or small hardware. So I think I agree with you that there is a certain degree of this in the market. Now, we don't buy stuff. So let's ask Martin, because Martin's the token end user. You know, what do you think, Martin?
We're seeing some convergence. I think, like yourself, some of it isn't as converged as you may think. You may find that IBM may have multiple storage products all with the same name, but actually look underneath the covers, it's a different operating system. When we talk about Dell, Unity's not going away. They're keeping Unity for hybrid. If you want to run flash and disk. So if anything, they've just expanded their portfolio again.
Oh, that's always the case, surely, when you bring in a new product. But it doesn't mean that the old ones are going to stick around forever. If I was working, for instance, on Extreme.io, I'd be polishing my CV and looking to move into another organization fast as possible.
Yeah, but Unity is still a core product for them, because Unity is their mid-range hard or hybrid. So unless they're going to put hard drives into PowerStore, we have no indication that's very likely.
Let me overwhelm you with ours. And I've had a hint that the SAS expansion trays for PowerStore can accept small form factor disk drives.
That's interesting. But at the moment, they're not talking about it. They're really saying Unity continues as a hybrid. And hybrid makes a lot of sense in file serving type environments. You don't necessarily want to go all flash for a lot of file serving environments. There's no real reason to do so. It's not compute storage, it's just storage. And this is where PowerStore should excel, where the all-flash devices do excel. They allow you to free up compute because they remove some of the latency, which is inherent into a hard drive platform. So that's why people want all-flash, but you don't really care about latency and how quickly you retrieve your Office document, really. You don't care if it's a million IOPS. You just want it to appear in a reasonable time.
So I'm going to raise a couple of other things there around that market, because you started to touch on what mid-range could even mean, Martin. And I think a couple of things that were raised in the discussion that we had with the Dell Technologies folks, and that was how big the mid-range market is and how cost-sensitive it might be. Now, you highlighted, you know, the size of the market yourself, Martin, and I do think they highlighted the cost sensitivity of it. And it makes me wonder how you could get to a situation in the mid-range where you could only have a product that was an all-flash solution. PowerMax, high-end, possibly. But in the mid-range, it sounds to me that that would still be a cost-sensitive challenge to overcome.
Yeah, I think mid-range is very cost-sensitive. But over the past 10, 15 years, we've had this conversation, what's mid-range, what's enterprise? Actually, they're the same thing, really. Most mid-range customers, and that's large corporations run, Fortune 100 companies that run mid-range storage devices, they have exactly the same availability requirements as they do in their enterprise. We've come down to this, that the enterprise class array support mainframe is almost the only thing which makes sense.
Yeah, going back 10 years, we used to say enterprise class meant that you had a different degree of availability and resiliency. And typically, if you were an enterprise class solution, if one part of the componentry failed, it didn't take half the machine down, or it didn't do what traditional mid-range solutions do. It would go to a write-through mode where performance went through the floor. So you could lose a fraction of an enterprise array like a controller, and it would lose you, 10% or 20% of the actual performance. And typically those boxes supported the mainframe protocol. And I think now that's almost like becoming a category in its own right, because Pure don't support mainframe.
Yeah, but that's not it. But even that definition wasn't true 10 years ago, because the Shark's always been a dual head array.
Oh, yeah, true.
So if we argued 10 years ago, there were three enterprise class arrays. There's the whatever Shark is now, Symmetrix DMX, and the Hitachi arrays, both of which came, you could either buy one from Hitachi or HP, basically the same thing. But architecturally, they were all slightly different. And definitely the Shark, as it was a dual head arrays, was how it was designed, was paired by AIX boxes.
Yep, good point. So does that mean, Chris, mid-range is the new enterprise? You know, can we push the enterprise category onto its own category simply because it needs to support mainframe? And is everything effectively mid-range today?
Could be. The high end, what used to be called monolithic arrays, always have had monstrous capacity. But I think the mid-range could get that with QLC flash and marry monstrous capacity with all flash speed. And that might also answer the problem that Martin's highlighted, which is cost. We get 100 plus layer QLC flash. I think the cost is going to go down quite a lot.
Is it going to go down far enough, though, to justify not putting in spinning media? I'm still not really sure I can see that price point could be reached by QLC. And if all you need to do is just have a reasonable, reliable platform and you only need, say, 200 or 300 terabytes, is there still a market for a disk-based system for those sort of customers who really don't honestly care? You know, are some mid-range customers, so what's the best way to describe them without being rude about them? Are they so sort of indifferent to the specifics of the technology that all they need is a box that runs, that is easy to manage, that is cheap, rather than something that is super high performance, has the latest technology and so on?
If you take a lawyer, a law firm or an accountant's firm, where they may not be doing a lot of analytics work, they don't need high performance for storing files, so they want to store them in a secure way. Yeah, but they may think actually put it on hard drive is the most sensible place to put it. They don't necessarily want to put those documents in the cloud. They want to keep it as local as they possibly can. So this is, and of course, Chris, I'm not sure what order the podcasts are coming out. We do know there are things going on in the hard disk space which will improve performance there.
Do you mean multi-actuator drives?
Yes, we talked to Seagate, and this it's going to seem a bit like a time warp. Actually, that will come out after this one comes out, even though it was recorded before this one. And that was a very interesting discussion about some of the challenges of supporting dual actuator. I won't jump ahead and spoil the fun of that for people who I'm hoping will listen to that one and find it really enjoyable. But actually, it was quite mind-blowingly interesting from a technical perspective, wasn't it, Martin? Some of the things they were talking about how you have to manage that media to make it work properly.
Oh, fascinating. Fascinating problem, the way that works. But it just shows that there is still going to be innovation in that hard drive space.
Okay. Suppose we look at PowerStore again, and we say it's got an NVMe drive base enclosure and SAS expansion enclosures. And as far as the SAS protocol concerned, it couldn't give a monkey's whether at the end of the SAS drive there's an SSD or a hard disk drive. SAS port, there's an SSD or a hard disk drive. Currently, the SAS expansion bays are 2.5 inch slots. It's going to be, theoretically, isn't it, dead easy to shove a expansion tray in there which has 3.5 inch disk slots, and that way you get the bulk capacity.
It is, that's true, but that's not announced, so we can only go about what's announced at the moment. And you logically you would say yes, that seems quite a sensible thing to do, but at the moment, as I say, Unity is their hybrid device, and this is an all-flash device. And then certainly not talking to customers about any intention of putting spinning disks in them. They would like to keep this an all-flash product range, I think, as much as possible.
I've heard Jeff Clark talk once or twice in a presentation session. And this is one determined dude. I mean, this guy is like a meat grinder. He's like a marketing tank coming forward. We're going to have one mid-range brand. I believe him. There's going to be one mid-range brand, and Unity is toast. It'll take a year maybe, but it's toast. Extreme.io is toast. SC is toast. Equal Logic is toast. VNX is toast. It's going to be PowerStore.
It won't take them a year to get rid of Unity. That's 5 years. There's so much legacy. Jeff can talk as much as he'd like, but for instance, they put in a completely new CLI, so you're going to have to port all the CLIs. So all these customers who have got automated code, which is written using the old Navi CLI, which goes all the way back to Clarion days, they're going to look at this and think, you know what? Well, we might as well go and talk to other vendors. This is the problem about actually trying to retire a product. When you start to retire a product, and depending on the migration path and how clean you make it, and that includes all your processes around it, you might as well go and talk to another vendor. Because if you can convince another vendor this is a takeout opportunity, the price will fall. And if you're going to have to do a lot of work anyway, you might as well go to the market.
I'd just like to interject very slightly there for a second, Chris, to just ask you the question. Jeff Clark, Eric Herzog, in a ring, who would you put your money on?
Jeff Clark, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Right, well, there you go, then. Shirts, but...
okay.
So, I'll tell you who I'd believe.
Yeah.
The referee.
This referee is being commissioned by Pat Gelsinger. No, I wouldn't say that. One other aspect of mid-range arrays I've been prompted to think about in preparing for this talk was NVMe over fabric startups, E8, Accelero, Apeiron, Pavilion, Vexarta. They've all gone quiet one way or another. E8 gets bought by AWS. Accelero's gone really quiet. Apeiron, I think, is in a coffin. Nerd will confirm. Vexarta's been bought by StoreCentric, which, bless them, I'm sorry, but they're not mainstream storage array vendor at the moment. And Pavilion is the only one that seems to still have a kettle of steam behind it with new execs recruited and so on. It really does seem to want to break out, but the others have just gone away. I think the NVMe over Fabric storage array startup steam is coming to a close.
And that's probably a fair point to make, bearing in mind that this box, the PowerStore, doesn't support it directly today.
It's ready, though. Isn't it?
Everything's ready, you know. I'm marathon ready. I just, you know, it might be a...
All we're going to do is stick a new container in you, Chris, which will give you marathon legs.
Exactly, and I'll be off and running. You know, I really dislike the term something ready when there isn't an offering that they can say this is how it works and this is what it will do. You know, why would you make something ready, air quotes, and then not release it? I don't get that. Anyway, you're right about the idea that NVMe over Fabric seems to have gone a bit quiet. It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because, and I'm going to defer to Martin slightly here, and just simply because I know that we've talked about this before, but, you know, this whole idea of replacing your existing fabrics, we had with Fibre Channel over Ethernet, and that was going to take over the world and never did.
Yes.
And at the time, I remember thinking, this just is never going to happen because there's so much invested in Fibre Channel that it's not going to happen. This one, you could say it's slightly different because we could use the same technology, but you had to be up to a certain level of revision and test it and all the rest of it. But maybe it's just still too early for the technology. Maybe the standards just aren't there yet.
Nobody's talking to me about it particularly. And at the moment, I don't think we really see the need for it. That's the thing. So NVMe over Fabric is an interesting technology for people who are building devices, who want to build out scale out devices. Is it an access protocol at the moment? It's years away from being an access protocol, unless you're maybe a hyperscaler or something very, very large. Yet again, I think it could be an FC over Ethernet type of product. It may never become an access product. I don't know at the moment. It's not something which I'm crying out to do.
Good Lord, the FCOE kiss of death.
Yeah.
And it seems that FC powers on as a block protocol, maybe vSAN or something like or an SDS, but manages to keep going. Or we look at file protocols or object protocols. It may be that V's replacement for the block fabric never emerges.
So Fibre Channel continues on like the knight on Monty Python and the Holy Grail, where he's just he's got NVMe over fabrics coming along, slicing an arm off, and he's like, no, it's on your flesh wound. I'm still here. I'm still fighting. And Fibre Channel lives to tell another day, doesn't it? And in fact, I can see a little meme there of the knight with no arms and no legs just sitting there going, 64 gig,
it's a flesh wound.
It's just a flesh wound. But actually, you know, I do wonder whether that's possibly true, that we might see NVMe over fabrics become either just a hyperscaler tool to allow them to do that cross VMs and things like that, and or something that the larger enterprises do when they try to move away from traditional hardware and they start going into much more commodity hardware like they're doing. And then that becomes a fabric of choice, and the mid-range customers never move because there's never a real justification for it.
Let's be honest at the moment, Chris, we have to set this in a context of what is going around in the globe at the moment. I don't think anybody's very interested in ripping out their fabrics at the moment.
Nobody's going to be doing anything for a good 12 months.
Yeah. So in all investment decisions are going to be on certainly strategic ones like this, which if you're going to change your fabric, that's a big strategic thing. They're all going to be on hold for 12 to 18 months while everybody try and works out what the new world looks like.
And that's an interesting angle, maybe, Chris, to, you know, to think about that. In this instance, does it matter if they've come out and just said it's NVMe over Fabrics ready, as many other companies have said, when we're not going to do anything for at least the next 12 months because the economy is just not going to be in a position to take it?
That's probably just a near-term delay. Pure came out with NVMe ready flash arrays, and then eventually delivered NVMe over Fabrics to flash arrays. So I don't think we need worry about EMC not actually putting NVMe over Fabrics readiness in place. But coronavirus is going to slow things down unquestionably. It's not EMC's fault. It's just going to happen, hit everybody. Which is not going to favour new technology startups, is it?
Customers
are going to go for safety.
Yeah, and that in itself is an interesting discussion because I put an item on our little agenda here to say, and this is not a stab at Dell, but that's part of what our initial conversation was. You know, have they simply rebranded their technology, or have they delivered what you might call a challenger product? And is there really enough innovation required in the mid-range market going forward? Should we be expecting vendors to be packing in more features, or are the solutions we have good enough? You know, did what Dell produce, without being super innovative, actually just move it on to that next level and say, here's what customers now want. We've done as much as we need to do in terms of innovation. We don't need to spend $1 billion innovating, because it's not going to be a big enough market to justify it.
This comes into something which we've seen in the mid-range space, but there is a risk for many mid-range vendors that they turn their arrays into the Amstrad stereo of storage, where every feature is put in and there's lots of knobs and dials which you never turn, you never actually use, but it all looks good, and you've got a very pretty flashing lights in the Amstrad stereo way, always used to be a graphic equalizer. I don't know if there's a US equivalent of this, of the Amstrad stereo, but I'm sure Chris know exactly what I'm talking about there.
The Homer car.
Yeah. Yeah, the Homer car. Yeah, definitely the Homer car.
Dell EMC had found that its component arrays for PowerStore, the SC, the Unity, the VNX, the Extreme IO, collectively had fallen behind the competition. They'd fallen behind NetApp with clustering. They'd fallen behind support and business models with Pure. They'd fallen behind predictive analytics as pioneered by HPE. So a lot of the work on PowerStore was just to bring it up to table stakes equality with those vendors.
See, but with some of this, Chris, I mean, you talk about the NetApp clustering. From my experience, and this is just my experience, but talking to other people, most of you don't give a toss about it. you have a siloed mid-range. You don't really want to scale it out massively. And actually, you look at the clustering for PowerStore, it's very inelegant. It's not an any-to-any cluster. If you really want that type of single block space or block namespace, you wouldn't build a cluster like that. It seems to make very little sense to me at the moment. So is that the Pure model? Well, the Pure model is just a marketing. We're in marketecture there. That's fine. They could have done that any time. They've had attempts at doing this, I can tell you that, Chris. But they have tried similar things in the past. A lot of companies aren't that interesting. They're coming up with all kinds of innovative ways of charging and marketing and encouraging you to stay on their platform. The analytics work, yeah, they have invested quite a lot in analytics tools. But again, that's not particularly difficult to do. What they really needed to do was actually give it a sensible, easy-to-use front end to the data which they are collecting. Historically, certainly in the high end, they've collected a whole load of data. Certainly, that's what they were doing in theory to tune fast. And similarly with Unity. So all the support stuff was already there. They needed to make sure that customers had visibility of the stats they were giving back. But that's not innovation. The HP Nimble thing is excellent. It's the best one out there. But it wasn't really innovation. It was innovation presenting information which many storage vendors were already gathering. They just weren't presenting it back in a nice, easy to digest format for end users. They throw some ML to do some predictive failure analysis, but I don't see that as pure innovation. Don't get me wrong, certainly from HPE, the Nimble team, you did an excellent job in for site. It's great. It's the best out there at the moment. But innovation, yeah, it doesn't necessarily change the way I'd use my storage.
So let me just comment on that, Martin, just slightly. Somebody from HPE told me years ago that the whole point of the Nimble technology, the InfoSight technology, was not necessarily to give the customer a better view of what was going on. It was to allow them to scale the company and have fewer support engineers and build a company that they could therefore sell a product at a lower price point and a more reliable product and scale the company quicker than it would be just to give the customer access to more data. It then turned out that that's a very useful thing to be able to do, because it's a good marketing ploy to be able to show that data to the customer. But this was about reducing the number of level one and level two engineers that they needed to answer phone calls and pushing everybody to level three. So I think you're right. I think it was a great thing, but it necessarily doesn't directly apply. And I just want to go back and very quickly, sorry, Chris, I know you probably have got like a million and one things to ask there, but I just wanted to point out the thing about the clustering and to say that I agree with Martin that if somebody said to me, you can build an enormous NetApp with, what is it, 12 nodes on a SAN-based one or 6 nodes on a file-based one paired, I wouldn't have built that, because that would have been a horrendous support issue, because there'd be so many nodes built into that infrastructure, so much to upgrade every time you wanted to change anything. it will be really tough. So actually, I would have built, instead of a federated solution like that, I would have built something where I had lots of systems, and then I use the hypervisor maybe to move things using storage vMotion or other techniques, rather than rely on the actual platform to do it for me. So I think there's lots of reasons why that architecture doesn't really give me a lot of benefit.
With PowerStore running in a VM, does that give vMotion possibilities once the PowerStore VM mode gets clustered?
Now, it was unclear exactly how scalable this architecture was. So I asked the question very clearly, is ESX exposed to me as a customer in the same way that it would be if it was running on, say, VxRail or something like that, where it was an actual hypervisor platform that was part of the infrastructure? It wasn't clear what the answer was, because at that point, I would say that, Chris, then that this becomes just a generic box that just happens to be running a VSA on it, a bit like, say, Nutanix run or other platforms run. So why would that be any different to VxRail? Well, VxRail's got integrated vSAN, so it's in the hypervisor, not in the VSA. But why would it be any different to other solutions that look like this? And you're right, surely then the storage device could then move around and become portable across those infrastructures. And if it was abstracted enough to the level that even one particular component of that runs the support for one volume, surely moving workloads around becomes super dynamic compared to the cluster type of configuration we're thinking of, which might be a bit like a NetApp. But NetApp already had that, didn't it? Because they had SVMs, they had storage virtual machines already. So maybe it is something similar. So I don't really know how that ESX is exposed to us at this point.
There's one other little angle I've been toying with here. PowerStore OS is software. It could run in the cloud. So imagine a PowerStore OS running on Amazon and PowerStore OS running on premises on Dell EMC hardware. You've suddenly got yourself a Dell EMC data fabric that looks a little bit stronger in principle than NetApp's with its on-tap on-premises and cloud volumes up in the cloud.
I would say the initial target will be Azure, not Amazon, and maybe Google. Amazon will be there. Probably is on their priority list, but Amazon's much harder to do because of Amazon. It's technically no harder. But I would not be surprised to see something from Dell Technologies where they were to support PowerStore running on Azure. That would make perfect sense to me.
There's a big technical problem with all of these, though. And that's, if you look at the way that the architecture is designed that runs on premises, you've got two controller nodes, each of which are independently running a storage controller, let's call it that, whether it's virtualized or not. Both of those controller nodes talk to a shared NVMe, NVRAM pair, which provide the consistency for writes if you have any sort of crash. And then you have a set of disk shelves, which are shared NVMe, on a single PCIe backplane that both controllers can talk to. Typically, when you go in the cloud, most of the implementations of a single virtual machine running in the cloud will give you NVMe devices that are physically connected to that physical piece of hardware that is running your VM at the time. And if that crashes, there's no guarantee you'll get that NVMe device back the next time you power it up. And or you cannot share NVMe devices between individual virtual instances. So you can't create two instances that run a pair of controllers in the cloud sharing the same NVMe devices, unless you've got another way of doing it. And that's why in Pure's architecture, they did something slightly different, and they created virtual machines for each of the groups of disks. And then those virtual machines talked to two other virtual machines, which were the controllers across the network. So if any of those individual components failed, they would just be rebuilt as if they were a disk that had failed and been reinstantiated. So I'm not sure in the current model, Dell could just lift and shift that to the cloud without some engineering challenges to make it work properly. Not saying they couldn't do it in the future, not saying they're not working on it, but it would be tricky the way it currently is implemented.
If this turns out to be another competitor's technology that is solid and has legs, then I'd see Dell EMC saying, yep, we'll take that on board.
What I don't know is whether they really want to go to the cloud like that, because that's not really their model. Their model is to lead into the cloud through VMware. So if anything, it seems that it would be more likely that they'd somehow try and leverage something in through VMware on AWS. Now, it seems logical that they could possibly integrate the storage through that route and create a VM that runs on VMware on AWS, and maybe either expose that data to the VMware and AWS. God, there's got to be a better recognition. Is it VMC? It's pretty awful. I think it's VMC, isn't it? Or whatever it is. But expose the data to the guests running in VM, let's call it VMC, even if it isn't, in VMC directly through that VM, and also into the native cloud across a connection, a network connection. So maybe that could be the way that they decide to do it. And that would be, wouldn't it be similar to the way that Datrium do their DR and their stuff into the cloud?
VMware Cloud Foundation rules forever.
Yeah. So effectively, I think VMware will be the lead for that. And it'll be things that plug in as a hypervisor on that VMware platform. That seems like the more logical way that they would do it.
With PowerStore, Dell EMC, in principle, I hasten to say in principle, in case Martin kicks us something down my throat, has a single operating system, single hardware range, like Pure, like, quotes, IBM. But NetApp stands out with having multiple hardware software product ranges in the mid-range, E-Series, Elements, and ONTAP. And HP stands out with having multiple mid-range hardware arrays, Nimble, Primera, 3PAR. Do we think that NetApp and HPE will go towards a converged operating system model like the other suppliers?
HPE, definitely. NetApp, I don't think is particularly likely, because E-Series is a very different device and it's got a particular niche which they aim it at. So I would say that E-Series would stay. I can't see them trying to converge all their operating systems into a single storage operating system at the moment.
So I would say that HPE have already started to do that, because Primera is essentially 3PAR plus, let's call it that. I'll probably get kicked by Calvin for that, but effectively there's a lot of IP from the 3PAR platform, so theoretically connecting them and migrating from one to the other shouldn't be that much of a big change for customers. And at some point, the 3PAR platform can just gracefully be retired. The difference is, of course, Nimble is nothing like that. So the question, I guess, you have to ask is, why have a second platform in that instance? Can Primera take over all those tasks that the Nimble platform can do? And if it can't, does that give us that position of an all-flash and a hybrid as two separate architectures that are built deliberately to be separate because they have different ways of managing the media?
Yes. I don't know.
And in terms of the NetApp one, I think Martin's right. I think E is very different. E is also the basis of a storage grid. So a storage grid is effectively a couple of controllers with E-Series underneath it. And then that, I think Element OS might at some point go away. I can just see that being not superfluous, but I think that they could possibly transfer customers onto the ONTAP stuff at some point. It's only going to be those really big scale-out customers that are going to continue to need it. And if you think about it, I haven't seen any performance improvements or any change in performance from that platform for a long time. And that was really, even though it's all flash, not an all-flash performance play, because it was only ever doing sort of 5 millisecond response time. It was never sub-millisecond, 100 microsecond type thing. Mm-hmm. So it makes you wonder whether that will go away at some point and whether ONTAP can fill that gap. And then you effectively get left with ONTAP in its multiple forms, which is obviously one is an all-flashy type thing, and or a block or flash, and E-Series, which is used to also support the object store platform.
I think that's right.
But it does smack of, across the whole market, a certain degree of standardization, generalization, focus on a smaller number of platforms and a more consistent set of platforms. And it probably, to me, don't know about to you guys, but it to me says that in the mid-range, there's less need to differentiate through hardware and features become sort of uniform. So everybody wants snapshots, replication, you know, data protection, consistent performance. But really, I don't think anybody really cares how that is delivered, and that they're not really looking for unique architectures to achieve that.
No, I don't think we are. I really don't think end users especially care. And you're right with the feature range. And it's going to be very difficult for anybody to produce a new device which really stands out on features. The mid-range storage devices are pretty much feature complete from a storage point of view, unless there's something suddenly comes out of nowhere which we haven't thought of.
Don't you think it's a bit like the car market? You know, you look at cars nowadays, nobody talks about 0-60 or even top speed or anything like that. Cars now focus on other more softer things like the styling, the look, the connectivity to your phone and all that sort of stuff, because the basics around a car are just not as important to people. And I think maybe mid-range is a bit like that. You know, we're not bothered about the architecture. We're more bothered about the features it offers.
Or on the support infrastructure.
Yeah.
You're going to buy because a vendor can offer you a better support infrastructure or maybe a better path for refresh And so there may be reasons why things like the evergreen stuff does stick, because it's interesting to the people who control a lot of storage purchases, finance teams.
Chris, any final thoughts? And I think I would say that, you know, evergreen may be a whole discussion for another podcast, actually, because that whole, you know, approach that all the vendors are taking is another discussion. But for now, anything else this one?
I think PowerStore is a very strong product. I think Dell EMC have delivered what they said they'd do and brought out a unifying array with, on the face of it, solid migration capabilities from the other arrays to it. I think it's got a couple of standout attributes. The performance scaling of the controllers rather than capacity and performance scaling, that stands out for me. The apps on mode, the X mode with the VM, I'm not sure about that. I keep on thinking of Coho Data. It tried mm-hmm. compute on storage and it failed. Maybe this time it'll work with analysis at internet edge sites. I don't know. I hope it does right for Dell EMC's sake, but I don't know.
Okay. Martin, last conclusions?
It looks like a solid product. Looks like a good mid-range product. I don't know why I choose it over any other product. It will come down to the cost.
Yeah, and on as a final comment from me, I think you're right. I think a lot of the time we're getting in a position now where it's going to come down to cost, and it's going to come down to working with a vendor who might have other solutions in their portfolio that they can offer you as part of a package or as part of a wider set of solutions and technologies. So, yeah, not an individual product choice anymore. Okay, well, thank you very much for that. We've recorded for quite a long time, actually. That's quite impressive. So let's call it a quits for now and look forward to catching up with you guys soon.
It's always highly informative talking to you people. It's so refreshing because it's unvarnished stuff, of course, but you also dig deep in your own ways far more than vendors will.
Cheers, Chris.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.